Lean Leadership Podcast, Episode 5.
What leaders do every day models what everyone else does.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Hello, Lean Leadership Nation. I hope you're as fired up as I am today about our guest, Karen Martin. Karen Martin is a Shingo Award-winning author, speaker, lean consultant, and president of the Karen Martin Group. Since 2000, Karen's firm has helped organizations from startups to Fortune 100 companies, government agencies to nonprofits. Karen is an author of 4 books, 2 of which are Shingo Award winners, The Outstanding Organization and Value Stream Mapping. Karen is a highly rated speaker who wows her audiences with high-energy presentations containing practical takeaways. She's also an instructor for the University of California San Diego's Lean Enterprise Program and an industry advisor for the University of San Diego's Industrial Systems Engineering Program. I really enjoyed my conversation with Karen today, and I hope you get as much out of it as I did. So without further ado, I give you Karen Martin. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, I'm excited that you're here today. We touched a little bit on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do, and how Lean, Six Sigma, or continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Sure. So I have kind of an odd background. My undergrad degree is microbiology. And so I started my career, believe it or not, as a scientist. I was a licensed clinical lab scientist, and I did some medical research for a while. But that scientific background really gave me a great, you know, foundation for problem solving and data orientation and all those good things. And then I moved into business, and it was in the business of healthcare originally, and running different departments, building operations, and that's where I got my real love for process design, people management, you know, the whole cultural piece of things. And then I decided to start my firm in 1993, so I've been at it a while now, and started initially in healthcare, and then about 2000 started working with all types of industries. So now we provide all types of transformation support to pretty much every industry, government also, and every stage of the journey that an organization is in. And you can see a list of my clients on my website if you're curious about that.
Okay. And we'll get that website in the show notes page, but it is ksmartin.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right.
Thank you.
We talked a little bit about this in our pre-interview chat, but you've got an interesting quote for us from your favorite lean leader. And so if you could share that quote with us and tell us why you chose that quote.
Well, I'm not my own favorite lean leader. However, it is one of my quotes that I get a lot of reaction to, and I feel very passionately about it. And so I say this a lot. And my quote is, people are rarely the problem. And what I mean by that is that most of the time there's some sort of interpersonal or interdepartmental or interdivisional tension in organizations. And 99.999% of the time, when you dig into the root cause for that, it's about system design, process design, a structural or environmental reason why people are having difficulty getting along and liking working with one another. And if you solve the process and the systems problems, the people problems go away. And so I have a fairly strong opinion about the way managers manage, the way leaders lead, the way HR departments handle people problems. And I think they're pretty far off base much of the time. And systems and process design solves a lot of people problems. And, you know, we can actually all get along.
I can remember years ago when I was an operations manager, first really serious senior management job. And my boss pulled me into his office and he said, Chris, if you're easy on the people and hard on the process, you will take care of 90% of the problems you have out there. And he is
absolutely
good, right.
Good quote. That was a good boss.
You can use that whenever you need to, right?
So yeah, I like that.
Okay. Well, Karen, one of my goals is for this podcast is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences. So what I'd like is if you could just tell us a story about for how or why you chose this profession or how the profession chose you.
That's funny. I was just going to say that. I don't think I chose it. It chose me. You know, it was back in my corporate days. I was with three startups in a row. And I was building the operational infrastructure for all three startups and then got into the sales and the legal side of all three at the same time. And I discovered that I had a bit of a gift for process design and systems design, where, you know, pretty much all the teams were very high performing. And so I got tired of the corporate grind and decided to go out on my own and thought that I'd like to share what I'd experienced with other people. And what I was shocked to learn, I mean, absolutely stunned. And remember, this is quite a while ago, so I was much younger and naive. I was stunned to learn that most organizations didn't perform at those levels, and they didn't have documented processes, and they didn't have, you know, smooth operations. And so, you know, I thought I was going to go out and do just a little bit of tweaking here and there. And what I have found, you know, in many cases, you're really rebuilding from the ground up in much of the case, in order for people to have smooth operations.
So what I love about your background is that you're not an industrial engineer. You don't have an IE background, but yet you saw process and you saw design and you saw people, and it's really enabled you to be a change agent and improve a lot of people's lives at work. So for people that may be listening to the podcast right now, don't doubt yourself. If you don't have the engineering credentials, that you can be a change agent when it comes to lean and continuous improvement.
Yeah. And if I could play on that, I agree very much. You do not have to be degreed, but you do have to study your butt off. I mean, you have to read a lot. You have to experiment. You have to talk with other people. You have to observe. You have to listen. You know, you can get a lot of education without getting a degree. And I always say I earned my MBA on the streets. And
the school of hard knocks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, you've had an incredible career that you talked about in the intro. You continue to see success with conferences and workshops, books, your own personal company. I look at your website and your team is almost like an all-star team when it comes to lean and continuous improvement. And we're going to get to that, but I know you've also experienced setbacks when it comes to lean and continuous improvement. So can you share with us a story about what you consider your biggest career setback with lean and any pitfalls or mistakes you went through that you want to share with our listeners?
Okay. So I don't know if I would characterize it exactly as a setback, but one of the things that hit me very hard. So it was 2000 when I started using lean exclusively in the work that I do. Prior to that, it was more kind of traditional total quality management, TQM, big, you know, fan of W. Edwards Deming, and had done a ton of work in the quality movement with that. So lean was a whole different animal to me. I think that there's a lot about lean that a lot of people that are practicing lean don't even understand because they haven't really studied it deeply. And so one of the things that kind of caught me off guard was this notion that you really, really have to have leadership buy-in. So in the early days of lean, I heard and I believed that you could start lean at the, you know, kind of grassroots level, maybe even the middle management level, and you could be wickedly successful with transforming an organization using lean management from that perspective. I no longer believe that, and I've got plenty of proof that that is just fundamentally wrong. It does not work. Can you move the needle? Yes. Can you make improvement and make, you know, a better work environment? Yes. But to transform into a pretty mature lean organization absolutely requires CEO commitment and executive level commitment. And it's not going to happen otherwise. I am very convinced of this now.
You have to have buy-in, because at that CEO level, especially some of these mid-sized private companies or even large private companies, the CEO is the one person that if everybody else says yes and he says no, the answer is no. So
right.
That hits home.
Yeah. So as a setback, I was kind of, it felt like a slap in the face to realize that I had been somewhat overpromising to clients. I felt that if the CEO wasn't on board, that, you know, we could still do it. We could muscle our way through a successful transformation. And so now, if the CEO isn't into it, I don't say no to the engagement, but I'm very, very careful to caveat how much they can reasonably accomplish without that CEO. And I've got a couple clients right now where the CEO is definitely not, you know, kind of thinking with a lean mind much of the time at all. And but they're making progress. You know, as an organization, they could be making a whole lot more, but they're making progress. And, you know, sometimes that's good enough.
Is there a particular time or a particular moment where you just like you almost put the palm to the face and said, "Oh, I've done this wrong," or I missed it? Is something particular in with that?
Oh, how about every time I facilitate? No, seriously. I mean, I think one of the gifts, or not a gift, one of the practices and disciplines that all people in improvement really need to embrace, in fact, I would argue all people in life should embrace, is reflection, deep reflection. And so there's not a day in front of a client, there's probably not even a meeting that I'm in with a client where when I do my reflection afterwards, I don't go, wow, you know, I think I could have framed it this way, or, you know, I wish I had held back a little here, or I wish I had said more, you know, but those aren't, you know, slapping me and making me feel bad and all that stuff. It's just pure plan, do, study, adjust. It's learning, it's reflecting and doing that. So, you know, facilitation's hard. Everyone who does it knows how hard it is. And you know, you're not perfect. No one's perfect. No one's going to be perfect. And it's great to learn.
Absolutely. That own little personal mental PDSA exercise can, you know, teach you a lot about yourself and how to perform your job better. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So, well, now is the fun part. What I'd like for you to do is kind of tell us your success story or your aha moment with lean or continuous improvement. You know, I'm not necessarily envisioning something where the clouds part and a ray of light shines down on where you're standing, but there had to be something pretty close to that.
You know, there have been a lot of those moments. This is not actually exactly what you asked, but it's very close. And I want to share the story because it's fundamental to what makes lean work. And it's a story about Martha. So Martha was on a Kaizen event team, and we were working on an estimating process for a manufacturer. And as they were mapping, we were using metrics-based process mapping. And as the team was mapping the process, I was looking at Martha's swim lane, and she was this estimating coordinator. And in my mind, I'm like, non-value adding. And, you know, we hadn't gotten to that part of mapping yet. So when we got to that part of mapping and the team started identifying what was clearly value adding, you could see Martha start to, you know, kind of shrink in her chair, in her seat. And, you know, I always say to teams, look, you know, no one's going to guarantee that the content of your job's not going to change. I mean, after all, improvement is change, but your company has guaranteed you're never going to lose a paycheck over improvement. And that's what we make our clients agree to. And so at a break, I said to Martha, do you see what I see, Martha? And she said, yeah. I said, what do you see? She said, I see I don't have a job in the future state. And I said, well, you have a paycheck. You may not be serving in that traffic cop role that, you know, I just have to ask you, is that satisfying to you? And she said, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, no. I mean, all I do is chase after paperwork and make sure that Sally delivers the bill. And it's not very fulfilling. Well, what would you like to do, Martha? I mean, what would be more fulfilling? What job would you love to have in this organization? And I'm just asking this to kind of test the waters. And she said she wanted to be an estimator. And she said, but no one will ever let me do that. And I said, why? And she said, because they don't see me in that role. They see me as a secretary, a glorified secretary. So we went to her boss over break, and I, you know, suggested to him that she may be actually designing herself out of a job, and brave Martha, you know, courage for Martha to be doing this. And you know, what about this idea that she could be an estimator? And he poo-pooed it at first and then started really thinking about it. And to make a long story short, Martha is still an estimator at this organization now 8 years later and loves her job, is far more highly fulfilled. They got rid of waste. They improved the process. And it's just one of those stories where it really can be a win-win-win for everybody. It doesn't have to be a company deciding to lay off people and that type of thing. So it's that I love that story about Martha. And it was just a wonderful story, you know, to see the positive aspect of improvement.
Well, that is a great story, and it is kind of an aha moment for some folks that may be listening that who equate lean with layoffs. And anybody that practices it and has been leading lean efforts knows that typically the best people, the best minds, end up in your Kaizen event. So while their role may change, their value to the organization is indistinguishable from the Kaizen event.
Yeah. Now I had a I had a situation yesterday at a client where it didn't end quite that lovely. And it was a gentleman who we started realizing he had a very similar role to Martha, but he wasn't about to give up that role. And so the leadership team is working with him as we speak to help him understand that his role, you know, isn't as high value as they'd like him to have. And so we'll see how long it takes him to turn the corner.
Yeah, I will. I drew a bell-shaped curve for a group I was talking to last week. And, you know, I showed them, hey, here's the early adopters. Here are the people that, these are the people that wrap around the corner at the Apple store when the new iPhone comes out. And on the other end of the bell curve, you have what I call CAVE people. And everybody kind of looks at me and says, CAVE stands for constantly against virtually everything. So it doesn't matter what you suggest. That's they're going to poo-poo it, right? So what I explained to them is the people that we wanted to work for and that we wanted whose minds and attention we wanted were the folks in the middle, because you've already got the other folks. The other folks aren't worth your time because they're not worth your effort because they're just not going to change. So if you fight for the middle, you're going to get, you know, the 90% of the organization that you want. So I really like that, you know, the CAVE people, CAVE mentality, where I'm not coming out, I'm not changing it. So, well, now we're going to move into what I refer to as the hot seat segment. These are stories that may not necessarily require a story, but it's just shoot from the hip, come with your first response. So the first question I would have is, do you have a lean continuous improvement pet peeve or something that you frequently see being applied or being done wrong?
Oh, and I can only say one.
Pick one. I know you got plenty, but pick your biggest one.
Oh, it's all about removing waste.
Okay. Can you expound upon that?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a big part of what lean is, but it's so not all about removing waste. I mean, you know, sometimes lean, you know, well, not sometimes, always lean is about how an organization aligns around purpose. It's around how leaders lead and coach. It's around how the front lines are given the authority to make continuous improvement on a regular basis. It's about how you position your products to be more attractive to the marketplace. That's something that people don't ever think about what lean is. And it's so about that. It's about, you know, how you position yourself to win against you know, steep competition. I mean, there's so much to lean that thinking it's all about reducing waste is just, you know, minimizes lean to, you know, a fraction of what it is.
It limits the possibilities.
Yeah.
So, well, what do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey?
For me, I think, and this is more of a personal journey and personal development thing, you know, I knew how to solve problems very well. I didn't know how to get others to learn how to solve problems well. And I was a supervisor way too early in my maturity spectrum. And I wish I knew then what I know now about how to get others to, you know, stop leaping to solutions and to do a more methodical plan and the PDSA cycle and that type of thing. And a lot of that has to do with learning how to listen really, really well and ask really good questions back to help people learn. So I think that's the most important thing for me so far.
Okay. Well, do you have a piece of advice that you would give to someone who's just starting out in Lean, Six Sigma, or continuous improvement?
I would say don't underestimate the amount of time you need to be actively engaged in learning the skill. So many people go to a Lean Six Sigma program, green belt, black belt, or otherwise, and think they know Lean. And those programs are very light on Lean, very light on Lean. And so, you know, people, you know, come out of these programs falsely believing they have a level of proficiency that they simply don't possess. Now you can gain it. You can grow it, but it takes a while to get highly proficient in Lean. And so I just would say, you know, make sure that you don't think that certificate you got is it.
That's why we refer to it as a lean journey, not your lean certificate.
Right.
So, absolutely. Right. Well, what piece of advice would you give to the journeyman professional? Maybe something that you learned recently or someone told you recently that helped you?
You know, I think it's kind of related to the first or what I just said about the learning. I see a lot of green facilitators, coaches putting really undue pressure on themselves to be perfect. And, you know, part of learning is doing. In fact, almost all of learning is about doing. So it's one thing to, you know, watch someone facilitate or read about facilitating. It's a whole nother thing to be the facilitator. And you know, no one's going to be perfect. And it's okay. You know, you learn by doing.
Okay. Well, this next question is kind of exciting for me because I'm speaking to a woman who is authored or been a co-author for four incredible books, Shingo award-winning books. And if you have, I'm sure you have an impressive bookshelf. So beside your four books, what's a favorite book or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners?
So I think one of the most powerful books and powerful people in the world today to listen to is Rich Sheridan. He's the CEO of a company in Ann Arbor, Michigan called Menlo Innovations, has a wickedly effective culture and environment, and was actually doing lean without even consciously realizing he was, you know, managing with using lean philosophy. And he has a book that's out, it's been out about a year now, I think, called Joy Inc. Joy, J-O-Y, Joy Incorporated, about how to bring joy to the workplace. And I'm totally with Rich that work does not have to be, you know, a difficult place that leaves you depleted at the end of the day. It can be a very joyful place that helps everyone develop to their fullest potential while they're earning a boatloads of money if they're in a private sector environment or serving constituents very, very well if they're in a not-for-profit or government agency.
I just had a mental image when you said that. I can't imagine somebody sitting there reading that book with a frown on their face. I mean, how could you? Exactly. I mean, seriously, how could you be upset? What are you reading? Oh, Joy Inc.
Joy right? Inc. Yeah. What a drag.
Yeah, good deal.
Exactly.
I know how much you, the listeners at the Lean Leadership Podcast, appreciates good audio content on the go. That's why I've partnered with Audible, so you can get one of the books mentioned in this podcast or many others for free if you haven't before at llpbook.com. All right. Well, I know that there are no magic wands when it comes to lean, but assuming there were, and you could fix anything in a facility or a company that you're coaching, what would you typically fix first?
Leadership mindsets.
Okay. Can you expand upon that?
Hands down. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to one of the things I said earlier about I don't believe that you can get an extensive and full lean transformation without the top leaders being really on board with it. It's, you know, what leaders do every day models what everyone else does. And so leaders sometimes forget that they are such the beacon for how people should think and behave in an organization. And so when they don't exhibit lean thinking and they don't, you know, operate with some of the lean, you know, values of ego, no ego, humility, respect for people and all that, it's really difficult to see anyone take lean seriously, since that's such a key part of, you know, moving in that direction of lean. So, you know, it's not that you can't get transformation to occur at some level without that leadership mindset in place, but it's going to be, you know, difficult and not as extensive.
That's part of the reason that I picked leadership as almost the micro niche inside the lean continuous improvement space, because I think it's the light switch. It's the difference between success and failure when it comes to, you know, a successful lean implementation or journey.
Yeah. And humility is a tough one for many, many people. And the higher you go, I find the harder it is for people to hang on to humility and not let their ego start getting in the way of what they do and how they think.
That's great advice. So if there is anybody familiar with lean or continuous improvement and they have a LinkedIn account or they're on Twitter and they're connected to you, they know that you provide some great content for lean with your webinar, your books, the website. Can you tell us a little bit about the webinars that you have and maybe some of the workshops you have coming up?
Sure. So workshop-wise for in-person work, Mike Osterling and I, so Mike is the co-author of three of the four books, as you mentioned. Our latest one is Value Stream Mapping, which just won a Shingo Award. So while we're receiving our Shingo Award in, oh my gosh, now I forget the dates. I think it's May. Oh my gosh. You'll have to check out my website.
We will make sure that the dates and that there's a link in the show notes page.
Thank you. So I think it's May. We're going to give a full day workshop on value stream mapping. And then each of us are also speaking individually throughout the conference. So that's the next workshop coming up. And then the webinars are monthly webinars. They're free of charge. We put quite a bit of effort into them on a wide variety of topics. They're all archived. So we've got a free library on our website, on YouTube, on SlideShare, and on Vimeo. All of the recorded webinars are there. And we actually get a lot of people requesting webinars. So the webinar that we're offering next month was a request from, you know, someone who's on our subscription list. And so we're giving a webinar on that topic. And it's about case studies for Kaizen events. Like what was the reason for a Kaizen event? How did the team approach the problem? What did they try? What was successful? Why was it successful, et cetera?
Okay, that's great. Thank you for all the content you put out there. I've enjoyed the webinars. I've enjoyed some of the other podcast episodes that you've recorded with other podcasters, and it's a great resource to go to. So how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do or if they have a question for you?
Sure. So my website's probably the best way. Our website is ksmartin.com. I also just got the URL karenmartin.com. So you can also get to me that way. It points to the ksmartin.com. And there's a contact page there. You can shoot an email. Or I think you mentioned a bit ago, Chris, about the social media. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. So any of those are ways as well.
Okay. Or just Google Karen Martin. I think you're the first, you're the first result that comes up there. So thank you for being in the space and so easily accessible. Karen.
Well, thank you.
Karen, I have really enjoyed this conversation, and this was fun. I think that our listeners have gained a lot of opportunity and a lot of knowledge. You give a lot of value here. And I wanted to personally thank you, and hopefully we can get you back on the podcast again.
Oh, I'd love it. Thank you very much for inviting me. It was fun.
All right.
You asked good questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the feedback. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking with Karen today. I thought her incredible insight was spot on, and I really appreciated her sharing her story about Martha. It takes tremendous leadership courage to accept that change is going to take place on a personal level, and those are the types of people you should seek out for your Kaizen teams. I would highly recommend that you pick up any of Karen's books or check out the webinar she has at www.ksmartin.com. Links to Karen's books and other items we discussed in the interview can be found on the show notes page for this episode at www.leanleadershippodcast.com/005. I want to end today with echoing what Karen said about learning by doing. So I'd encourage you to look at your environment, choose something that you can improve, and take action. Tweet what you did to me and Karen. The podcast is on Twitter at Lean Podcast, and Karen is on Twitter at Karen Martin OPEX. That's OPEX. Good luck, and remember, progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.